Well, hi, everybody. With a scratchy throat, I'm Larry Jacobs. How are you? This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. It's September 28th, almost October already. Okay, 2017, and welcome to today's show. I got a very special guest, education expert Shane Safer, okay, who's a coach and a writer and a facilitator, the founding co-principal of the June Jordan School for Equity. I love her for that, which was an innovative national model identified as having beaten the odds and supporting the success of low-income students of color. In other words, just for that, she's going to heaven, and also for being on Education Talk Radio today. We'll archive the show at education-talkradio.org. That's our website. We've tweeted it out over at the EduTalk Radio. Please follow us. You can follow Shane, let me get this here, at Shane Safer, S-H A-N-E-S-A-F-I-R, Shane Safer. All right. And by the way, I've been saying this all day, probably will for the rest of the week. We changed our Facebook page. It's now facebook.com/EduTalkRadio. And we're also still using the old one, but the new one's a little easier, facebook.com/EduTalkRadio. Okay. Without further ado, let me bring California girl Shane Safer on. Hi, Shane. Welcome to the show. It's Larry.
Good morning, Larry. It's a pleasure to be with you.
No, you're wrong. It's afternoon. It's noontime here. What time is it where you
That's
are?
That's true. It's 9:01 where I am.
9:01. Okay, obviously you're in California. And I know you're in Oakland. If I'm not mistaken,
I'm in Oakland,
right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, have you been here before?
Oh, I've been
life
there many times.
Life is wonderful.
Times.
It's quite hot with the current climate. Yeah, it was about 90 degrees yesterday, but it's a beautiful day out today.
Well, today I live in Maine, all the way across the country from you, and it's been 90 the last 3 days, and finally it's back to what we call normal, about 68, bright sun, breezy, it's absolutely perfect. So
beautiful.
It's a great
when
fall day
snow
here
start?
In Maine. Probably tomorrow mm-hmm. afternoon at 3 o'clock. Right. No, it's not usual. We had one freaky snowstorm a couple of years ago on the day before Thanksgiving, but that's unusual. Usually it starts mid-December, right around there.
Okay. Gotcha.
So
we got a little
bit
wait.
Got a little bit of leeway here. Okay. And this is great stuff. I want to say right off the bat that Shane is coming to me from my good friends over at Smart Brief Education. smartbrief.com/industry/education. They do newsletters, curated news. They're great. They have a whole education section, a zillion, different newsletters for all the different subject areas and counselors and that sort of thing and leaders and all that, and that's free to your inbox. So check that out. They do a good job. And then their wonderful editor, Melissa Greenwood, every month picks two bloggers to be honored with the Smart Brief Editor's Choice Content Award winner. And this month, well, actually last month's winner was Shane. Da, 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 da. Yay! Okay, the crowd, please, everybody, settle
intro.
Down. Control yourself.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
I know. It's incredibly exciting. So besides everything
that
else you've done.
I was very honored.
Yeah. So beyond everything else you've done, you're now an Editor's Choice Content Award winner. We call you an ECAW. That's what we take your initials, an Editor's Choice Content Award winner. And I want to make sure that everybody knows you wrote this incredible book, okay? Again, Shane's name is S-H-A-N-E, and her last name, S-A-F-I-R, okay? The Listening Leader, okay? It's a beautiful book, first of all, creating the conditions for equitable school transformation, of which you are an expert in, I got to tell you that. And I must read you something, Shane, before we begin. We're going to talk about listening, the listening leader.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one
mm-hmm.
guy who wrote a blurb on the back of your book, and I just have to read this aloud, which is complimentary. Shane has written a brilliant book, as engaging as it is informative and as revelatory as it is relevant. It is a must-read for school leaders and those aspire to lead. That's from a gentleman named, I assume it's a gentleman. Actually, I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. Chris Emden. Is that a male or a female?
Yes, a male. Wonderful author who works at Columbia University and published his own incredible book called For White
right.
Folks.
Right, and I got to tell you the name of the book. Yeah, I got to tell you the name of the book. Yeah, I just overspoke you. I apologize. I just love this.
Okay.
For white folks who teach in the hood, and the rest of y'all, too. That's the name of the
book
from Chris Emden. White folks who teach in the hood and the rest of y'all, too. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought that was really clever. All right, Shane,
that's
listening. I do radio, so I love you for promoting listening. People always ask me, how many viewers do you have? I said, I hope none. They're not looking at anything. I hope they're listeners.
Dying art, right?
You know, it is a dying art. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And what got you interested? And this is a bizarre question, but it's true. What got you interested in listening? What got you caught in this?
Such a great question. Well, as you mentioned, I was part of a team of teachers that started a school in 2003, June Jordan School for Equity. And in the process of founding that school, I actually took a couple years off of teaching and did community organizing, more or less. And really, we were trying to build a community vision for the new school. And the heart of that whole process was listening, 100%.
Wow.
Learning to sit one-on-one with parents in the community and listen deeply to their hopes and dreams for their children and to their struggles in the current schools, and to be able to craft a vision out of what they cared about. So I learned that kind of living room by living room in the couple years leading up to the opening of the school, and then tried to carry that skill set into being a leader, being a principal of the school. But as I write about in the introduction, as soon as I had, you know, a staff to develop and cultivate, I realized that, you know, it was even more complex than I thought to listen well.
Yeah.
And as a leader, you know, listening to a group of adults that you're trying to lead is quite different from listening to parents in their living rooms.
It really is. And you said at the beginning, listening is becoming a dying art. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's just incredible. And the more we watch the political shows on TV, everybody over shouting each other. Okay?
It becomes less and less.
And that's just part and parcel of television and what's going on. And even the movies, if I may say this, okay, I just thought of this. You know, if you go to the big summer movies and a lot of them all the year, they're all special effects. They're visual. Nothing wrong with special effects. But they're visual. They're not asking you to listen as much as movies used to do. Okay? And all this contributes to a lack of listening skills, which is not good. All right? And you talked about this, and I want to make sure everybody knows this. And do I have the date somewhere? I don't know if I do. You blog for Edutopia, wonderful organization. Edutopia.org, and your post, and can't see a date on it.
I can find
getting
it. I'll check it.
Oh, I can tell people it's called, they could probably just Google edutopia.org/Shane Safer, but it's getting to know students deeply. Getting to know students deeply. Thank you. August 1st.
Yeah.
Thank you. The 2017.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. Okay. Teachers can improve outcomes and build equity in the classroom by listening closely to their students. Then you go through and we can talk about this, six ways to do it. Oh, there's the date. I just saw the date under your name. My apologies. Okay. I just saw it. I was looking on the top. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And there's another aspect, because then you went and you wrote this book, The Listening Leader. So here on the blog, you're talking teachers can improve outcomes by listening to students, and now you're talking about creating the conditions for equitable school transformation by becoming the listening leader. Who's the leader? Is the leader the principal, or is the leader the teacher?
Great question. You know, I wrote this book.
That's why they pay me the big bucks,
level.
Shane. Shane, that
but
is why they
I'm
pay me the big bucks for these incredible questions.
I actually struggled with that question early on when I was framing, you know, the outline for the book. And I ended up deciding to write it for leaders at every level of the education system. So there are illustrations and examples that are about superintendent leadership. There are a whole bunch about principal level or assistant principal level leadership. And then there's application for teacher leaders and coaches as well. So I think the methods of listening leadership are really cross-cutting for all those different levels.
What have you learned about listening?
Well, I want to come back to something you said. So this idea that listening is a dying art, right, or that we've forgotten or lost some of the, you know, grace and skill of listening. You know, I think we see that playing out on a national scale in our inability to listen across differences. And then not a surprise that our schools are microcosms, right, of the sort of national scene. And so they reflect this. And there's this culture of sort of talk and expertise. And I think sometimes leaders in schools feel a need to flex their expertise. But what I've learned through both being a principal and then coaching leaders for the last 10 years is that if you learn to listen deeply, if you learn to understand the story and the struggles of the people that you're working with, that is the strongest ingredient to transforming a school. More than being an expert, more than you actually, some of the complex problems we face in schools today, there really is no clear solution. And you have to learn how to listen and sort of tap into people's knowledge and expertise and build that sense of common purpose in order to drive a change agenda forward.
So is the equity you're talking, the two things are a little bit juxtaposed in my head. I just want to go with the
sure.
equity you're yeah, the equity that you
mm-hmm.
are talking about comes from understanding, i.e. listening, okay, to the folks around you, be they your students, to your superintendent, to other teachers, whatever the case may be, okay? Once you understand them and you listen and you really get a sense of it, things become more equitable. And I just put those two things together for me.
That's a great question. It sounds when you say it that way, like, then a miracle happens. I listen and there's equity.
By the way, you're not defending your PhD. Don't worry about it.
No,
okay.
No,
I just, I'm just,
okay.
Yes. Yeah.
I think
I'm just curious
for me,
about it.
I feel like listening is not that it produces equity in and of itself, but it is one of the most powerful levers toward equity. So when I talk about equity in schools, I think about school communities where every child can thrive. And we're talking about academically, but we're also talking
mm-hmm.
about socially and emotionally, right? They feel that sense of connection and belonging and personhood when they show up at school. So how is listening connected to that? I think we've been so mired in this quantitative data, the high-level indicators around test scores and, you know, graduation rates and course completion. And those things are very important. They tell us part of an equity story, but they don't really explain why a student is getting stuck in the classroom, right? Or a child who's sleepy and not engaging with the work, or who, you know, may have had to work a job at night, or maybe
mm-hmm,
facing,
right.
You know, living in a high poverty community. We can only access that knowledge through listening and caring and asking questions. And I think that's really similar for teachers, that many teachers I work with today, there is a sense of burnout and initiative fatigue.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's a sense of like, we've been, our school
yeah.
and our district has been doing 20 million things. I don't know what I'm actually supposed to do or what matters. And so if we just can slow down and set aside the initiative for a minute and connect with the human beings and their passion and skills, we can create a real force and momentum.
Yeah, we really can. It's a good answer. The other thing I was thinking as I was asking that question, it dawned on me that when you went into your neighborhood, which I assume was kind of an urban
mm-hmm.
neighborhood, if I may, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Definitely.
And you go in there, yeah, and you talk to the moms and dads or whoever, and
mm-hmm.
when you take the time to listen to them, okay, that.
Mm-hmm.
creates an equity in their mind. Here's somebody who's actually listening
mm.
to me and going to do
mm.
something. And instead of feeling like I'm under the burden of the school telling me what to do, I don't mean to paint a bad picture of schools, but here's
no.
somebody who's listening and going to make a change. I am equal to everyone else in her mind. It was another way to look at
yes.
it, in my opinion.
That's a beautiful, I love the way you phrase that. I mean, it's really about, in that sense, leveling the playing field or shifting the power
yeah.
dynamic that exists between the school and student or family.
Yeah, and tell
mm-hmm.
me about this June Jordan School you started. It's the, and I love this, it's the June Jordan School for Equity in San Francisco. Still going on? It's still working?
It sure is, yeah. It's thriving
Great.
Under the leadership
You're the founding
of Jessica Huang. Yeah, well, let's see, so Matt Alexander and I were principals in the early years, and he's still there, but in a slightly different role, and then a wonderful leader, Jessica Huang, runs the school now. So June Jordan, you may have heard of, was a fantastic poet and author out of UC Berkeley. She ran a course called Poetry for the People, and
I
actually
had
the good fortune.
Yeah.
yeah, I had the
but
good
I,
fortune
if you,
to
If you had asked
her.
Me who she was, I wouldn't have been able to tell you, but I knew the name.
Oh, you've heard of her. Okay.
So thank you.
I got a teacher fellowship to take her course the last time she taught it while she was actually dying of breast cancer at the time. And so I just fell in love with her and her work and her model, which was about student empowerment and student voice. And so when we opened the school in 2003, we had the first class of students, about 100 of them, engage in this democratic debate and process to choose their name of their school. And we offered them three options, one of which was June Jordan. They researched and they staged debates and we had guest speakers. And then we voted, and they voted for June Jordan. So that's the origin of the school's name. And, you know, the school is an extraordinary place. It's the mission is really to educate a new generation, a multiracial generation of leaders who are change agents in their community. And the emphasis instructionally is on independent thinking and critical thinking and also kind of social action, taking action in your community.
Nice.
So the young people do service learning. They, you know, they have internships. And the curriculum is very performance assessment based. So they do a lot of demonstrations of learning. They have to defend their work in order to graduate, almost like a mini dissertation committee. And it's just a really extraordinary group of people who lead that school now. I'm honored to have been a part of its founding and continue to follow its success.
Yeah, it's great. Congratulations on that. By the way, I want to mention, Shane, we'll go out. You speak to schools and all that sort of thing, right?
I do.
I just want to make that
yep.
clear. Yeah, ShaneSafer.com. Just we'll do a little plug for you. ShaneSafer.com.
Yeah.
She's really good at that, you know. Professional learning and all that sort of stuff. So you
That's
should
nice.
Call
yes,
her
yeah,
and read
exactly
her book, The Listening
name.
Leader. And you should also read
Thank
the blog
you.
On Edutopia, Getting to Know Students Deeply. There was a couple of things in there. It's under culturally responsive teaching. I think listening is good regardless of the culture. You know, even if you know, whatever, it's important. But you had these six steps. One-on-one interviews with the kid, with the student, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, how old are the kids at June Jordan?
High school, 9th through 12th grade.
High school, I just didn't know. Okay,
yep.
I figured
yep.
after you said all the things you were doing, it didn't seem right
yep.
for a first grader to be doing all that. Okay, one-on-one interview.
On
yeah,
own.
Right. Go out and be a social activist, a little billionaire. Right. Yeah. Yeah, just take the bus. Go ahead, hon. I'll see you at 7:30.
Yeah, right, exactly.
No
Good
problem.
Luck. We'll see you at the
yeah.
end of the day.
Yeah.
No.
Good teaching. Take care. Okay. And so six ways to lip by listening, one-on-one interviews, okay, with
mm-hmm.
the kids. Did your teachers have – I'm just going to ask this at June Jordan. Did the teachers have time to do this?
So time is such an important question that always gets asked, especially
oh,
I work with some schools, large comprehensive high schools, right, where teachers have 150 to 180 students. And the way that I try to help them shrink the change is to think about two or three students in your classes that you have some curiosity about and that you feel like you want to better understand. And lean into those young people and listen to them deeply. And most likely they're going to illuminate some patterns for you that will apply to other young people. As long as like building the muscle of listening with a few kids so that you
yeah.
can become a better listener overall. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. As a matter of fact, it makes great sense.
Okay.
The second thing you wrote, which focus groups and audio interviews, and can people really run a focus group? Team with a colleague, find a quiet classroom, invite half a dozen students to participate, and ask them what? Talk about what?
Well, it sort of depends on what you're trying to learn. So I'll give you an example of this from June Jordan, the school we were just talking about. So they're
sure.
a very diverse population of students, and they have, I think at this point, about 25% African-American students. And they wanted to understand the experiences of their Black students in their community. So they did an audio interview focus group at lunch, totally anonymous, with the kids' permission to record. And they asked them about their experiences. And then from that session, they cut about a 15-minute audio segment, and they brought it to the staff. And here's the brilliant way in which they presented this data. They asked the staff, what do you think some of our African-American students might say about their experiences in the classroom? And people had whatever assumptions or thoughts they might have had. And then they played some of the data, and it was very humbling for the staff to hear that despite
sure.
being a school that's, you know, anti-racist and about social justice, that the kids were still experiencing discrimination.
That's right.
Right? And the classroom
that's right.
and bias. And, you know, the depth of that. And so it really allowed them to listen to the students' voices and then think about some strategic ways that they could create a better culture in the classroom for that population.
Well,
so that's
cool.
An example.
School climate, school culture. I like that. I like that. That's good.
Yeah.
Feedback interviews. You ask them for specific feedback about yourself. Ooh, that's even worse than a principal coming in.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That generates a lot of anxiety.
Boom. The customers are talking. Okay.
Exactly.
Chris Emden, who we mentioned before. Chris Emden calls, I love this phrase, co-generative dialogues. We have to talk to Chris about making that simpler. Co-generative dialogue. He's a college professor. He has to use big words. Tell him I know a big word too. Delicatessen. Tell him I know that. Okay.
I'll let him know.
Right. So, Chris, a structured practice for getting student feedback. Boy, the whole time I was teaching, I never asked for student feedback once. I didn't care, but I was wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
What's going on? Right.
I mean, I think this gets back to our earlier conversation about the sort of expertise culture, right? Where as teachers, we have this attachment to our content often, and we want to feel like the expert in the room. But in any profession, there should be an emphasis on feedback and how do we get better, right? Continuous improvement. And so why would teaching be any different? We do some things well, and there's things we can improve. And so this is just a simple way to convene a group of students and ask them what's working well in our class, what's not working well for you, and what are some suggestions you have? What could I do differently?
How do teachers react when you tell them that idea?
You know, I'm a huge believer in teacher choice and teachers opting into their own professional learning. And so I think the way that I try to approach this is I offer people a menu. You know, here are six ways that you could begin to listen to students differently.
Pick one.
Which one do you want to try? Right?
Yeah.
So it never feels top down or forced, which is kind of the antithesis of listening leadership. But it feels like an opportunity that they can choose into.
I love it. It's great. Now, my favorite one, I don't know if it's the favorite one.
Tell me.
For everybody, was the Shadow a Student Challenge. Again, this is all in your Edutopia post from August 1st. I'm going to just read this. Put on your tennis shoes and be one of your students for an entire day. Get his or her permission, and I assume the principal's too. Dress comfortably, meet your student, approach observation with a notebook. Be sure you set aside time to study the experiential data you've gathered, looking for patterns and raising questions. This one is tough and out of reach for some teachers, you wrote, but it can be a valuable experience. Okay. Will you really experience what the kid is experiencing? You've done this, obviously.
I think to some extent. Yes, I've done this, and I think you're never going to get an unadulterated experience, right? Because the teacher sees you and the kid sees you. But I think you want to be as undercover as possible, or as as subtle as possible. And it's like being a cultural anthropologist, right? It's like studying this experience, the story of a kid's day. You can learn so much about what school's like. And what gets in the way, right? What are some of the barriers?
Yeah, what would you learn? Give me an example of what you might learn.
Well, I'm thinking about, so some of these ideas are featured in chapter 8 of the book, which was actually guest written by Matt Alexander, who is still connected
to
June
Jordan. Who's the principal now? Who's your buddy at June Jordan?
He's not the principal now. He's like the director of leadership development, but he's still one of the key leaders there. So he talked about doing this as a principal and following a young man through his day. And what he realized at the end of the day was how much time the student was spending in passive listening mode, sitting, you know, quietly and just taking in the teacher's lecture, you know, notes or whatever. And he felt himself getting kind of anxious through that experience. And so just to walk away and be able to say, okay, that there's some real implications for this. We need to figure out how to decrease teacher talk time.
I like that. And you can learn that kind of thing from there. Believe me, it makes sense. Okay. And I was just curious, what actually had come out of that. And, we all went through school. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We all went through college. All right. And we know how to doodle. Okay. We know how to zone out. We all do that. We do. But you forget. Suddenly you're the teacher. Now everybody's supposed to be listening to you as opposed to doodling or passing notes. Okay, or sitting there just looking like they're interested. So that it is fun, okay, and it's important. I get that now. I see it. The other thing I thought you wrote was really important was point number six here. And this I thought was especially important, and I'm not sure if it's the most important in an urban school or not, but academic language tracking, the ability to internalize and use academic language in class.
That's
a gatekeeper for many ELL students, but I consider it for everybody. By paying attention to what students are and are not, when they're not or either are or are not employing academic language, you get important data, which can help you create scaffolds. And boy, is that ever true, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And too many times the kids get into slang, okay, and the slang becomes language. Well, no, it is language, you know what I mean. But it becomes their and slang, if I may, it sounds like, I'm 600 years old, slang becomes sloppy, okay? Like I never use slang. But it becomes sloppy, okay, and it makes you sloppy, all right. And to get kids listening to their language, and making sure they're speaking so that the whole world can understand them in a good way, I think that's incredibly important. And too often we just let that go.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm a big believer in code switching. I don't know if that's a term you're familiar with, where you teach kids to explicitly switch codes between, you know, home language or, you know, friend slash peer street language versus academic language. And it's, you know, never to diminish any other ways in which we speak. We all have different codes, right, that we're operating in. But that they have to master the academic language of the of college, of, you know, the professional world, if they're going to be able to play ball in there. And I even think about my own experience. I was a native English speaker, you know, white middle-class kid who landed in Ivy League University and from public school felt really underqualified around academic language. I mean, I remember students in my freshman year of college using the term dichotomy and never having heard that word and feeling just sort of embarrassed or self-conscious, right? And so if you think about that experience amplified by 100 for an English language learner, a student who hasn't grown up you know, with parents who went to college or whatever, we have an obligation as teachers to bridge that gap for them. And I think this is one way you can do it.
Yeah, and you went to Brown. Are you from New England, where I live?
No, I grew up in the Bay Area and flew all the way across country. I don't think I'd ever even visited Brown. Yeah.
You know winter. You've been in Providence in the winter. You know that.
I sure do. My senior year of college was the biggest storm they've had in, I don't know, a couple decades. It was pretty intense.
Right. It's good to experience it. You'll like California even better than you do. Okay?
I love the change of seasons, though. I really liked that fall.
Well,
you know,
feel free to come up, visit me and my wife in February in Maine. And I guarantee you won't miss the change of seasons ever again.
Okay, all right.
Okay, you're welcome. You're right. Just plan a nice February day, and you'll see. Okay? We love it here. But you know what I mean.
I bet it's beautiful.
October is coming. October's coming. We're done. I said that at the beginning of the show. Boom, September 28th. October's coming. All right? And you asked me to ask you this. What are two actions that a school leader can take in October to become more of a listening leader? Okay? And why do you think those are important ones? There you go. You're now the expert. Go ahead.
You know, we've talked
I told you
about
you'd be an expert.
Them, which I think this is – I'm going to try – this is a great time of year to do the shadow a student protocol. I mean, I think especially for leaders, if you have that flexibility, take
they
a
do.
Day or a half day and follow a student and try to understand what their experience is. You're going to get the kind of data that you just can't get any other way. So that's one I would definitely recommend. And the other one, I think, for this time of year, that I profile in the book, is called a listening campaign. And that's where you choose a group of stakeholders that you want to do some listening sessions with, and you organize about 30 minutes per person in kind of a confidential space where you're taking notes, and you have the same anchor set of questions. I give examples in the book that you ask to just really get a sense of, you know, people's experience and feedback around a particular issue. So it might be professional development. You interview, do a listening campaign with all of your department chairs in the high school. And, you know, what's worked about our professional development in the past? What hasn't worked for you? You know, what are you passionate as a department chair about helping your department do this year? What support are you going to need to do that, right? These kinds of questions. And you just take in notes And then at the end, you get to look for patterns across those interviews. And you can, if you want to, you can write up a little report or a PowerPoint deck that reflects back to people anonymously without their names on it. Here's what I heard from you. And this creates a lot of buy-in. It creates a sense of being listened to. And it also, again, gets you that street-level data that helps you move your school.
I hope they do that. It's really good stuff. And the other thing, and I always say this, and we're going to wind up on ending this on this. You know, we call ourselves teachers, but a teacher refers back to us, okay? And that we're the ones doing the teaching, so to speak. All right, but that's really not what school's about. School isn't about us teaching; it's about kids learning. All right? And that, again, is exactly kind of what your book is about, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's not about just constant verbiage from our mouths and from administrators' mouths and everything else. It's about listening and getting, as your thing said, get listening deeply.
Mm-hmm.
All right? What do you am I right? Am I right, Shane?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Right. I think It's so tempting to just want to tell people what to do and to feel like the expert. In some ways, I feel like a lot of us feel a need to defend our credentials, our position, but that's just not the heart of a powerful culture. And, you know, culture, Michael Fullan says, culture is the driver. It's the thing that changes schools or any organization, really. And how do you build that culture is you listen to people deeply and you create resource that I call relational capital. Because at the end of the day, and I learned this as an organizer in the years starting June Jordan, is that power lies in the relationship. It doesn't lie in the plan, the strategic plan. It doesn't lie necessarily in the test scores. The power to make change lies in that relationship and how you develop that relationship through listening.
And that goes from superintendents to administrators to teachers to parents to students, et cetera, et cetera. Shane, you're the best.
I mean, when you're thank you.
You're the best. Okay.
You're so
By the way,
thank
Shane, I read this somewhere. I know where I read it. Wait, right here on this sheet of paper when you sent me the book. I want to just mention Shane went to Brown. You have a degree in history. I would glance right over that. Wow. I taught social studies. A master's degree in education from Stanford. Okay. And two kids and a husband who teaches math in Oakland. You're okay, Shane. Mm-hmm. I really like you. You're welcome here anytime.
I like you too.
Are you writing something new now, or what's your next step?
At the moment, I'm writing just an article for Educational Leadership Magazine, the ASCD publication. I haven't gotten got myself together to plan a new book yet, but at some point I want to do that.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be good. This one is beautiful, The Listening Leader. And again, Shane Safer, her last name's S-A-F-I-R. I do suggest that Mike Fullan wrote the foreword, and it's just has everything in it. Thank you, Shane. And
thank
here
you
it is.
So much,
now
Larry,
you can go your whole day. You can go your whole day. It's only 9:30 now.
It's so early. It's true. Enjoy your fresh Maine fall day.
Oh, it's best. I'll have a lobster. I'll think of you. Lobsters are $3.99.
Excellent.
I'll
All right.
move on
Talk
from
to
there.
You again.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Shane.
Okay.
Have a great weekend.
Bye bye. You too.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Okay, Shane's cool. I like her. I liked her from the beginning. We started conversing via email. Good stuff, The Listening Leader. Smart Brief, Melissa Greenwood, you did it again. SmartBrief.com/industry/education. It's all free. It's all great. It's curated news. And they check all the posts out there because they want educator/teacher voice. Okay, that's the thing, and that's why we get great teachers, leaders, educators like Shane on. So thanks, Melissa. This is great. SmartBrief.com/industry/education. We'll archive the show at education-talkradio.org. And we will tweet it out at EduTalk Radio yet again. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. I just hiccuped. I can't believe it. Let's try it again. Thank you for listening.